hair flows in with the kiss, straight to my core, merging with my affinity lines. My whole body arches toward him. "Yes," I murmur, my own voice strange and low. "That's it. Do that." I pull him close. He brings his lips back to mine, his kiss more insistent this time. The stream of fire he's pushing into me ignites all over my body, scorching through me. We both gasp into each other's mouths as our affinities merge tight. Our kiss turns hard and hot as we grasp at each other's magic lines, a torrent of fire coursing down my throat, shattering through my body. His fire is hungry and seeking, pressing down through my mouth, on the edge of scalding. The core of me is hot and strong now, my center fully returning as his heat burns hot on my lips, pouring into me, blazingly strong. I can feel my whole body now, battered, exhausted, weak and ragged, but whole. Whole, and with a precarious balance restored. Vale's heat draws off my mouth, but I don't fall. It's back. My own fire, my own affinity, solid and sure. The shadows pull in from the edges of the room, and Vale's form recedes into the dark. After what seems like an eternity, flowing magic slides around my wrist, cool like a spring river, tentative, searching. Water magic. My eyes flutter open a sliver. Fane.
Vale,
I rasp out, still barely able to speak.
Where's Vale?
He'll be back, Fane reassures me, his voice a warm lull. Don't fret, love. You're going to be fine.
What happened to me?
My mouth is dry and hot, my body slick with sweat.
Your mage drunk, sweetling.
He props me up and presses a small cup to my lips.
Here, drink this,
he says, his arm tight around me, keeping me from tilting as the room spins. It's warm and pine bitter, with an undercurrent of sweet.
Be swellin',
I murmur, sloppily running my tongue over the edge of my upper lip.
And Arnis root, and honey thistle.
Very good, my little apothecary,
Fane says approvingly, guiding me back down onto the pillow. I half smile at his affectionate tone and kind touch.
When can I see my brother and my grandfather?
My head feels strange, lolling about, as if it's disconnected from my body.
Soon,
he gently croons. He brushes a tendril of damp hair off my face.
But first you need to sleep this off, Tesla. Let your affinity fully restore itself.
His voice fades far away, the scene blurring to nothing. Chapter 12. Wand Fasting. I'm awakened by the sound of Fane's voice. My eyes are sticky, the lids unnaturally heavy, and I can manage to open them only a sliver. I'm leaden with exhaustion, half-sleeping, but I can breathe normally now. And I feel only slightly hot with fever, not trembling and burning up like before. Still, the images before me seem ephemeral, the colors deepened and heightened.
She fought off an axe paladin, apparently.
Fane's reclining against a silk-cushioned divan, sumptuous red tapestries lining the walls and ceiling of the immense tent, a deep crimson rug on the floor patterned with sweeping gold and violet inlay. I blink, confused. Am I dreaming? My mind is as sluggish as my leaden body, but I know we're supposed to be at the nearest military base. Instead, I'm surrounded by luxury. An exquisitely carved bookcase lines the wall directly in front of me. It's filled with leather-bound volumes with gilded lettering, some written in Elfsiger. Gleaming brass nautical equipment lines the top shelf. Compact telescopes, a complicated sextant. An iron wood stove engraved with a branching river maple design pumps out warmth,
the tent toasty even though its flap is tied open. A cook fire blazes just outside the tent, and a young, bespectacled gardenerian sits by it, tuning a violin. He's stocky, his hair mussed, his civilian's tunic finely made, but wrinkled and haphazardly belted. It's twilight, the sky a deep blue fading to sapphire and hung with a waxing moon. Vale is seated near the tent's entrance, holding a glass of deep green liquid, unlike the crimson drink Fane is balancing on his knee. Their crystalline glasses glint in the amber light of a hanging lantern and the golden firelight emanating from the wood stove. Heat stabs and twists deep in my core at the sight of Vale, and I'm thrust into unsettled confusion. I can still feel his fire on my mouth like a ghostly brand, still resonating, still flushed warm. Vale and Fane are both clean and pressed, not sooty and worn like they were after rescuing me. The silk of their black uniforms is smooth and new, the silver spheres on their chests bright and unmarked. Their mage cloaks are thrown casually over the backs of their satin-cushioned chairs.
"Seems the Axe-Paladin was rough with her," Fane tells Vale, his tone flat.
I internally wince at the memory. The huge Celt laughing as he dragged me away from my brother.
"So she stole his wand and hurled fire at him."
Fane sips from his glass, his eyes tight on Vale.
"Well done, I say."
Vale's eyes flash.
"Yes, well, she almost killed herself in the process. Mage Annalise said this is the worst case she's ever seen."
Vale looks around.
"Where is the apothecary?"
"She'll be back in a few hours,"
Fane responds.
"She's prepping more tonic. But Priest Alphax has been here. He performed the healing ablutions."
Vale's gaze turns cynically cool.
"Oh, thank the Ancient One for that. She'll have no need for me then, or the apothecary. She can be healed with prayer."
Shock cuts through my haze, anger riding swiftly on its heels. How can he talk like this? He sounds like one of the bullying Celts, sneering at our religious beliefs. First comes the sneering, then the vandalizing of our churches, then we're being rounded up in barns. Fane sets his drink down with a sharp clink.
"I accept that you're a complete heathen, but I would ask that you refrain from mocking our faith."
His tone is biting. Vale stares at him for a long moment. Then his expression hardens, and he shakes his head.
"No, I absolutely cannot do that. My mother has turned into a complete zealot, and frankly, so has Vivian. You're one of the only people I can speak freely with. I respect you. Can't that be enough?"
Fane is silent, his eyes hot with offense.
"It was kind of you to let us use your tent,"
Vale offers, his tone conciliatory. Fane lets out a long, angry sigh and shoots him a sarcastic look.
"It wasn't kind. I hate staying in your tent. Priests have more flair for decorating than you do."
Vale's mouth lifts in a crooked grin, the tension dissipating.
"I prefer minimalism."
He looks around and shakes his head.
"Unlike you.
It's like an Ishkart market exploded in here." Fane's expression goes sly.
"Spoils of war, sweet Vale. It's not really gardenerian, your aesthetic. I have exotic tendencies."
Fane's eyes dance as he sips his drink, as if holding on to a delicious secret. He reclines back and sends Vale a critical glance.
"You seem spent. How long did it take to revive her?"
There are dark circles under Vale's eyes, the angularity of his face seeming heightened by fatigue.
"Almost the entire night."
That unsettling warmth rises in me. Vale revived me, stayed with me the whole night, kissed me.
"Drink."
Fane motions toward Vale's glass.
"You need it. I could barely sense your fire affinity earlier. It was like she stripped you bare."
Fane's mouth turns up at this, as if he's amused by his own words.
"Really, though,"
he continues, his tone now laced with concern.
"You look truly awful. How much of your fire did she pull?"
Vale lets out a long sigh and throws back a good portion of his drink, grimacing. His expression darkens.
Fane, she basically tried to devour my affinity on the way here. And it took...
He pauses, clearly uncomfortable.
A great deal of fire to restore her.
His brow tenses, and I have the strange sensation that he's struggling not to look at me, holding himself tightly removed. But I remember how he kissed me, the feel of his fire against my lips. As I watch them, I realize that Fane and Vale are both incredibly striking, with their angular features, aristocratic cheekbones, and dark hair. Even their postures are similar. They're both reclining with natural grace and elegance, like people used to luxury and money. But in other ways, they're complete opposites, much like their affinities. Vale sits still enough, but a simmering, almost vibrating tension seems to emanate from him, his eyes razor sharp. Fane, in contrast, seems all cool, unflappable grace, a fey light dancing in his gaze. There's an artistic grace about him. I study their uniforms, all black silk and silver embroidery, each with 5 lines on their sleeves to mark them as level 5 mages, and part of me is stunned by this turn of events. Our uniforms. Our soldiers. Powerful level 5 Gardnerian soldiers, ready to take on Celts and Urisk and anyone else who could come after us. The burning barn flashes through my mind. Fear grips me, pulling my gut tight. I focus on their uniforms, trying to stave off the terror. The silk of Vale's uniform lies smooth on his chest, his wand tucked into his wand belt. He carried me easily back in Doveshire, all sinuous muscle and strength. Struck down the paladin and the Icarol, and others. Shielded me against his mother's fire. They're both dangerous. And I'm safe. My family is safe. I breathe in deep. A blessed feeling of protection washes over me and beats back the lingering terror.
The grandfather says she's a level 3 mage, Fane tells Vale.
Fire flashes in Vale's eyes and he shoots Fane a scathing look.
The same fool of a grandfather who wouldn't let her have a wand?
Warmth floods through me at his show of support. I've been so long without the support of anyone, save Jules. None of my people have ever been willing to go against the grain to support me in my quest for a wand. Fane presses his mouth into a thin line.
The grandfather's traditional.
Vale spits out a sound of disdain and glares at Fane.
Isn't everyone these days?
You know, you might try being positive once in a while. Vale's eyes flare.
I'm too educated to be positive.
Fane lets out a long sigh and grimaces at Vale.
As I was saying, the fool of a grandfather informed me that our Tesla only knows about 5 spells. 5.
He glances toward me, and his gaze takes on a look of rapturous admiration.
The way she gathered the spells and layered them.
He pauses and shakes his head.
Extraordinary, really.
Vale's eyes glitter coldly in the firelight.
One more spell and she would have essentially exploded her own body.
Fane glowers theatrically at Vale.
Does the sheer artistry of this fail to reach you?
His lip quirks up, and he gestures toward me with his chin, his eyes filling with mischief.
She's quite pretty. You should fast to her, Vale.
Vale throws him a look of sharp censure.
Yes, I'm sure we'd hit it off famously.
Fane laughs into his glass.
You do have quite the way with women.
A lower river girl, and me.
His tone is flat.
You're quite the matchmaker, Fane.
You're a fool.
She's a lower river girl.
Vale counters, irritated. Hurt slices through me like jagged glass at the implied insult. Fane gapes at him, his brow tensing with disbelief.
You can't be serious.
What? Vale snipes at Fane.
Did you imagine we'd enjoy the symphony together?
biting sarcasm twists his tone. Meander through the Verpachian archives? Discuss literature? If she even knows how to read. She's an apothecary. Fane snipes back, annoyance darkening his gaze. Clearly she knows how to read. You know what most Lower River Gardenarians are like. Vale scoffs. They're practically Celtic peasants. Fane's eyes have narrowed to slits. Well, she could teach you a thing or two about layering spells. And carding wool, I'd imagine. Fane's expression turns cold. So she's a peasant and you're royalty. She's still a peasant who faced down an axe paladin, a large section of the Celtic and Orisk armies, an Icarol demon, and a dragon attack. Surely that counts in her favor. Vale glares at him, unmoved. Fane's lip turns up in a taunting sneer. Admit it. She's pretty. Vale swirls his glass and eyes Fane cagily. She's tolerable, in a rustic sort of way. Rustic? My profound hurt swells to a burgeoning, blood-simmering anger. Who's wand testing her? Fane asks, undaunted. Surely they'll want her tested. I have that unpleasant task. Fane shakes his head and pours himself another glass of crimson liquid from a gilded carafe, decorated with red glass in the shape of diamonds. Vale, you are my best friend. But right now, I think you are being a complete and utter ass. I have no desire to wandfest, you know that. Vale counters. And certainly not to her. Besides, she'll soon be swooning over Nils and his ilk, like the lot of them. Ah, Fane gloats, grinning. Jealousy. You know, Vale, if you tried to be just a little bit friendly, they'd swoon over you, too. Vale throws him a look of downright indifference. I'll never rate high as anyone's romantic obsession. I'm resigned to it. Fane laughs. That's because you scare people, what with your cheerful personality and all. I bite back the desire to curse. I stare at Vale, inwardly seething. I struggle against the impossible, exhausted heaviness of my frame, like I'm a great hunk of iron fused to the cot beneath me. It takes great effort to even lift my tongue. Vale is staring into the middle distance, the flash of a storm in his eyes, and I get the strong sensation once again that he's fighting the urge to stare at me, that he's fighting my pull, like a ship struggling against a strong current. Vale, Fane says, his voice now stripped of its edge. You should fast to her. There's more to that girl than homespun wool and calloused hands. And he stiffens, blinking, looking momentarily toward the floor. It would squelch the rumors about us. When Fane looks back up at Vale, there's vulnerability there, and an edge of fear. Vale's expression turns hard. I don't care what they say. I despise almost all of them, except for you and my siblings, though Vivian is growing more intolerable by the day. They're going to fast them all in 2 days' time. You know that, don't you?
What? No, not me.
Vale sits dangerously still, tension simmering off him. If I touched a flint to him, I imagine he'd ignite.
No,
Vale says, his voice firm, his expression bitter.
I'll not wandfast to anyone. Ever.
Wandfasting. My mind is thrown back to only days ago. Jules and I were sitting high up on Craig's Peak, side by side, our legs kicking over the edge. Jules's thigh briefly touched mine, and he was careful to edge himself slightly away, keeping a discreet and purposeful distance.
I suppose someday you'll be wandfasted,
Jules said offhandedly, but his brown eyes were fixed tight on me with unwavering intensity. The strong undercurrent of dissatisfaction in his tone unsettled me. All gardenarians wandfast, I replied, more defensive than I'd intended. He'd nodded, jaw stiff, then stared down at my hand, the subtle shimmer of my skin apparent in the dark. Jules's expression softened, became almost entranced.
"You've emerald dust on your skin."
A dazed smile lifted his lips.
"It's so lovely."
The heat of an uncomfortable flush bloomed on my cheeks.
"They'll mark your hands, won't they?"
he asked softly, trailing his finger lightly over the side of my hand. I could tell he meant it as a casual gesture, but his touch lingered, trailing gently on the skin of my little finger. There was a prickling heat in it that made my breath catch. Heart hammering, I'd moved my hand a fraction away, enough to break the contact, my cheeks burning. Perhaps sensing my discomfort, Jules had pulled his hand clear away until it was tight in his lap, restrained in a fist. He looked toward the horizon, stiff as a post, as if holding himself in censure. He swallowed audibly and looked sidelong at me. It became clear to me in that moment that he'd thought on this quite a bit, wanting to touch me, at war with himself over it. There was an apology in his eyes, mixed with fierce sadness. I took a deep breath and gave him a brief, encouraging half-smile, which he tried to return, but it didn't reach his eyes. We couldn't touch each other. We were both clear on the rules, both our cultures settled on this matter. He was quiet for a long time, his jaw set.
"It's for life, then, wand fasting."
I nodded. He turned a fraction, looked at me out of the corner of his eye.
"How do they do it?"
His voice was laced with dread, like I was headed for the gallows and he wanted to know exactly how I would be executed. "Well," I said uncomfortably, "a priest mage does it. The couple clasps their hands over each other's." I demonstrated with my own hands, drawing them into my lap, moving one over the other. "And he recites the spell over their hands and the lines appear. And they're bound for life."
"And that's it, then?"
I shook my head. "That's just to bind the couple. It's like your engagement ceremony. There's a separate ceremony to seal the fasting, like Celt weddings. The wand fasting lines darken when the couple is sealed. And after..." I reddened. "After they consummate the sealing, the lines spread up their wrists as a mark of their union." Jules considered that, his face tense. He looked at me sidelong.
"So, once you're wand-fasted, you can't be with anyone else?"
I nodded. "Or the marks turn painful. For women, only the women's lines turn into burns if they break their wand-fasting vows."
"But not the men?"
He spat out a sharp sound of derision.
"That's hardly fair."
"It's to keep our bloodlines intact," I said defensively. "We were almost wiped out, Jules. It's still going on,
I know,"
he interrupted, but there was understanding there, along with his frustration. The scourge of prejudice. We Gardnerians never seemed to get a moment's peace from it, especially those of us in border towns. An ever-shrinking border. Our mage soldiers were no match for the combined Celt and Uruk forces. Jules gave me a wry smile.
"If I were Gardnerian, do you think your grandfather would have us fasted?"
He clearly meant to toss it out as a flippant jest, but there was too much heat flaring in his eyes. My flush deepened. "Perhaps. I can't tell him of my private romantic longings, the things I think about only deep in the night. My dreams aren't of him. I dream of going to the university in Verpatia, apprenticing to an apothecary there, and someday meeting a Gardnerian scholar. He'd be tall, his hair raven black, his eyes piercing green. He'd have a ready smile that would light up his angular face. Kind, courteous, and bookish. He'd be privately affectionate and publicly reserved. But when he looked at me, there would be heat in his gaze. In my imaginings, my Gardnerian would see me one fall day, leaves ablaze as I walked from a university hall to the apothecary laboratory. He'd be immediately entranced. Court me. Leave me a single red rose and his favorite book, bound in black leather with gilded lettering along its side. He'd kiss me in a garden at night, lit by the blue glow of iron flowers. Then he'd fast to me, as quickly as he possibly could, the lines on our hands now matching, thin, delicate black swirls. We'd kiss in every secret alcove we could find, and there'd be fire in those stolen kisses. Then we'd seal our fasting, our fast lines darkening, and that night we'd consummate the sealing, the fasting lines flowing down our wrists, made intricate by the consummation, twining around our skin the way our bodies would twine around each other.
"Does it have to be to a Gardnerian?"
Jules asked, shattering my breathless reverie. His gaze is fraught with longing.
"Just curious,"
he quickly amended. I'm momentarily concerned that it might show in my face, my secret passionate longings. Longings that aren't for him, my kind, beloved friend. Jules's question hangs in the air, silent and still, full of meaning, the summer breeze holding it.
"Yes," I told him, treading lightly, not wanting to hurt sweet Jules.
The hope in his eyes morphed to dismay, and his eyes lingered on mine the way his fingers lingered on my skin. Warmth rippled through me, and I was momentarily thrust into a new confusion. I realized in that moment that I liked Jules's brief touch. It was pleasant and thrilling to be touched by a young man. And then the thought came, unbidden. What would it be like to kiss Jules? Alarmed, I shook the thought away. Such thoughts were too dangerous, straying clear past the rigid, fiercely protected and imposed boundaries between our two peoples. Those lines were the whole reason we weren't supposed to sneak up here alone. The fasting spell doesn't work unless the woman is pure, and both people have to be Gardnerian, or the priest won't fast them. I clarified, the words coming out harsher and firmer than I intended. He stiffened, seeing the barrier I'd set up, the barrier I was going to hold.
I wish there were no races,
he ground out, glowering at the horizon, his voice low with frustration. Just all of us the same. He let out a harsh, troubled breath, his jaw tensing. Finally, he sighed deeply, appearing resigned.
I'm sorry, Tesla. I feel like once you fast...
He turned toward me, his eyes intent.
I don't want to lose your friendship.
You'll never lose my friendship, I told him with fierce assurance. I don't care if you're a Celt. You'll always be like a brother to me. He winced, and I felt a pang in my heart for hurting him, but the boundaries between us needed to stand, or I would lead this friend I loved headfirst into disaster.
She's awake.
Vale's sour tone intrudes on my memories. His eyes are honed tight on me, and I feel his fire briefly shudder through me before he looks away. Fane scoffs at this.
She's delirious is what she is. She'll be in and out for a good while yet. Mage Annalise says she should come around sometime tomorrow morning.
Fane's tone softens, and his eyes are gentle as he sets them on me.
I do hope they find someone worthy of her.
Vale huffs impatiently at this.
Why don't you fast her, Fane, if you're so taken with her?
Who might Fane be fasting to? A woman's voice asks. The voice is soft and melodious, like the trickle of water. A young woman pushes the tent flap back and sweeps inside, smiling at Fane and Vale. She's impossibly lovely, absolutely dimming the beauty of the Upper River girls in both appearance and dress. A perfect, oval face with full lips and riveting emerald green eyes, her black hair cascading over her shoulders and down her back. Rubies hang from her perfect ears, and her black tunic and long underskirt are exquisite, the silk embroidered with threads of a deeper black than the silk, covering her garb in repeating designs of branching trees.
"Vivian, you glorious creature!"
Fane gets up and warmly kisses her on both cheeks, beaming. She beams back at him. She pulls off her black silk gloves and folds them neatly with slender, graceful hands, swirling wand-fasting marks decorating them.
"Vivian."
Vale's greeting is guarded, but there's a trace of amusement there.
"No, really, Vale. Don't get up on my account."
She teases snarkily. She turns back toward Fane.
"My brother overwhelms me with his affection."
Violin music lifts into the night air, winding into the tent. A heartbreakingly mournful yet lovely song.
"To what do we owe this immense pleasure?"
Vale inquires, though with considerable disinterest. Vivian takes the seat Fane offers her and settles in.
"I'm here to see Mother, of course."
"You may have to wait a day or two,"
Vale idly comments.
"She's busy laying waste to the world."
"I remember the dragons, the terrible fear, the river of fire. How can Vale sound so blasé? How can he remember that night and speak of it with such cool composure?" Fane fusses over Vivian, pouring her a drink, then takes a seat once more. He raises his glass in a toast.
"To our beloved great mage."
Vivian lifts her own glass, her eyes misting over.
"Yes, to Mother."
She takes a sip, contemplative for a moment, then gives Fane a look heavy with import.
"The Celts just ceded their entire northwestern territory to us. The border war is essentially over."
Fane nods, a calculating glint in his gaze.
"She's taken out their entire dragon horde, then?"
Vivian huffs a sound of contempt.
"Their entire horde, or at least most of it. Any surviving dragons won't be in their hands for long."
Vivian smiles.
"They're calling Mother the Black Witch. Did you know that?"
Fane smirks, lounging back.
"I rather like that. Your dear mother has a flair for the dramatic, I'll give her that. She certainly deserves an equally dramatic name.
Her attack..." He pauses, shaking his head as if momentarily overcome.
"Well-timed, I say. And well-played."
Vivian gives Fane a significant look.
"By the Ancient One's power, Fane."
Fane dips his head in assent.
"By the Ancient One's power, indeed."
Vale rolls his eyes at the two of them and gives a disdainful sigh. Vivian swivels her head and narrows her eyes to peer closely at her brother.
"You look dreadful, Vale." "He was saving a damsel in distress,"
Fane informs her, giving Vivian a look ripe with suggestion. Vivian glances sidelong toward me with obvious distaste. Then she looks to Fane and her expression lightens, her drink resting prettily in her lap.
"Enough talk of war. Who is it you're fasting to, Fane?"
She's delighted by the prospect. I can see it. Vale is studying his sister, his expression wary and unreadable, one eyebrow slightly cocked. They don't resemble each other much, except, perhaps, in their aristocratic features, but it's Vale who looks more like his powerful mother.
"To absolutely no one,"
Fane insists, stressing each word, looking to Vivian with theatrical devotion.
"You know my heart belongs to you, Vivian. And that you broke it when you so callously fasted to that glorious clod you're so enamored of."
He gestures toward me with his glass.
"We were speaking of Vale and Mage Tesla Harrow. Don't you think she deserves a level 5 mage for all her trouble?"
Vivian gapes at Fane.
"Fast her! To Vale! To the son of the Black Witch!"
Her voice has gone shrill.
"As a reward? Is that what you're suggesting?"
She shakes her head decidedly.
"Absolutely not. The girl's brave, to be sure. But there's talk she ran off with a Celt."
Vivian takes a sip of her drink and shoots Fane a poignant look, full of dark meaning. She leans in toward him.
"She might not be able to fast at all."
Fane gapes at Vivian, his face a mask of bewilderment.
They're spreading rumors about her? Already?
Vivian purses her lips at him.
It's more than a rumor.
I'm astonished, truly. Fane jabs his finger at me.
This girl should be given a parade through the streets of Valgard, with roses thrown at her feet. A lot of roses.
He shakes his head and crosses his legs gracefully, then lets out a long sigh.
But if you truly want to punish her, then by all means, Faster to Vale. With his legendary charm and extraordinary tact.
Vale's head gives a slight bob of amusement, his mouth tilting into a grin. Vivian eyes Fane with shock.
Vale has a legion of young women champing at the bit to fast to him.
Vale gives her an arch look.
True love, all of it, I'm sure.
She rounds on him. You could put in some small effort to be pleasant. They spar for a while longer, and I grow weary, their voices harder and harder to follow. The violin music turns to a piece I know, Winter's Dark. It's achingly beautiful, played masterfully. Fane is lost in the music as well, his glass tipped precariously to one side, tears filling his eyes.
Ancient One Edwin,
Fane calls outside, his mouth lifting into a wavering, melancholy smile.
If you keep playing like that, I'll fast to you.
It's the last thing I remember before the fatigue pulls me under. It's fully dark outside when I wake again. Vivian and Edwin are gone. Vale's and Fane's low voices rouse me from a deep, heavy slumber.
The way Malkin killed that Celt girl, I can't get it out of my mind.
Fane's expression is dark and troubled.
I dreamed of it, a terrible nightmare.
He shakes his head, as if trying to clear the memory.
That poor girl, huddled in the dirt. I didn't see her until...
Fane takes a deep breath, collecting himself.
It's like he goes out of his way to be just like the Urisk, the Celts. It's not right. We're supposed to be the righteous ones, the beacon of hope for a dark world.
Spoken with the idealism of a man who has studied far too much scripture, and exactly no history whatsoever.
Vale says, leveling a piercing gaze at Fane.
Gardnerians with overwhelming power will do exactly what any race does with overwhelming power. Abuse it.
Fane narrows his eyes at Vale.
Your cynicism borders on blasphemy.
Vale drops his forehead in his hand and massages it, shaking his head.
For the life of me, Fane, I cannot understand your attachment to this inflexible religion of ours. Frankly, it makes me question your intelligence.
He straightens and gestures toward Fane's drink, perched neatly in his elegant fingers.
You're a walking contradiction.
A reclining contradiction,
Fane tartly replies.
Waxing poetic about being the righteous ones with a glass of illegal Celtic spirits perched on your knee?
He shoots him a significant, knowing look.
I could go on.
I'm complicated,
Fane snipes back.
You're intellectually deluded,
Vale puts in flatly. Fane waves him away.
Your disdain won't work on me, Vale. I actually enjoy your unabashed elitism.
Vale is implacable.
I do not enjoy your romanticized ignorance.
Fane laughs.
You know, Vale, your absolute conviction that you are superior to me is sometimes overwhelming. Contrary to what you think, I best you in many areas.
And they would be? Hospitality, charm, water magic.
Fane shoots him a meaningful look.
Tact.
Vale eyes him slyly.
Don't forget historical delusions.
Fane glowers at him.
Don't meddle with my fantasies of reality. Your strident cynicism is one of your worst traits.
So I should join the ignorant, deluded, and falsely pious masses, according to you?
Fane laughs and mock toasts him.
You'd be much happier.
Would I be Fane?
Vale sweeps his drink in an all-encompassing gesture. Does all this lead to a happy ending? A shadow passes over Fane's expression. Then his face lightens with resignation. He holds his glass high. For tonight, we will pretend that it will. And we will toast to our new champion, the exquisite Tesla Harrow. Vale considers this with a tilt of his head, then nods, raising his glass a fraction, his eyes calmly taking me in. But I can feel the wild heat simmering beneath the calm. To Mage Tesla Harrow, Fane declares, chin high. Champion of the unappreciative, deluded masses. Fane downs his glass, takes a deep, satisfied breath, and lets it out. Fast to her, Vale, and quickly, before you lose your chance.
Chapter 13 Lower River Girl. The next morning, I'm awake before everyone else in the tent. A plump, gray-haired woman, who I assume is the apothecary, slumbers in the chair next to my cot, her breath a rhythmic whisper, and Fane is nowhere in sight. Vale is sprawled out on a floor cushion, a thin blanket fitfully wrapped around him like a messy binding. My blood turns hot at the sight of him, a black hurt mingling with the fire inside me, fierce as a lowering thundercloud. Lower River Girl. He spat it like I'm nothing but silt beneath his feet. Vale tosses and turns, his dreams seemingly troubled, his brow tensed tight as he murmurs to himself unintelligibly. A few times his face loses its angry sharpness and softens, his lips slightly parted as if he's about to speak, his expression becoming vulnerable and edged with sorrow. It twists something deep inside me and I rail against it, tears biting at my eyes. Seeing him like this, I feel unguarded and exposed, and deeply rattled. But his hurtful dismissal of me echoes through my mind, spearing through me like ice. By the time the gray light of an overcast dawn filters through the gap in the tent flap, I'm utterly furious, inwardly seething as Mage Annalise methodically tends to me with practiced hands, checking my pulse and reflexes, rubbing salve into my hands and feet. She places a warm mug of tonic into my hands, the steam wafting up to moisten my chin and my nose with its minty metallic scent. I glare at Vale, resentful of the sight of his sharp shoulder blade jutting out against the disheveled silk of his tunic. His back to me, he's still asleep on the rolled-out floor mat. There all night long in case his fire was needed, to help me. I should be thankful. His warm fire restarted my affinity, gave it fully back to me. But I'm not thankful. I'm lost in a wilderness of intense emotion. I hate that I feel this intense pull toward him, that our affinities line up so exactly, that I can't forget the feel of his lips on mine. She's a Lower River Girl. She's tolerable in a rustic sort of way. Hurt pierces through me, then an anger so raw I could spit fire right into his intimidating face.
There, good. Rest a bit more.
Mage Annalise is oblivious to my dark thoughts, smiling to herself as she pats my arm with an efficient hand, her silver Urthea orb bobbing restlessly on its chain, alongside her golden apothecary guildmaster pendant. I'm weak, but whole, and so upset I don't want to spend another minute here. And I feel humiliated. Humiliated that both Vale and Fane saw me half-naked. At the time, I was so desperate to breathe, so sickened with my own magic, that I barely noticed my nudity. But now, my health returning, I'm completely aware of what happened, how exposed I was. And I don't want to see Vale Gardner or Fane Quillen ever again. I want to forget that any of this ever happened. Vale is sipping some tea, both hands tight around the mug. His uniform is wrinkled and disheveled, and the shadow of a sparse beard edges his chin. The dark circles under his eyes have deepened, and his hair is uncombed. I can sense his heated awareness of me, his brow drawn tight. but he keeps his gaze resolutely fixed on his tea. The tent flap pulls back, the gray light momentarily washing out the riot of tapestry color surrounding us. Fane sails in, whistling to himself, looking well-rested and polished as a shiny gilder. His uniform is clean and pressed, with his cloak jauntily flowing out behind him and his exquisitely carved wand resting in his wand belt at a rakish angle. He's the epitome of a handsome, well-to-do, elegant gardenerian. And this makes me angry, too. Fane beams a dazzling smile at me as he enters. Ah, the lovely Mage Harrow awakens. He reaches into his cloak pocket and pulls out a scarlet pomegranate and a small, fat coin purse, setting them down on the table beside me. Mage Annalise quirks a smile and cocks one eyebrow at him. She flicks her finger toward the pomegranate. And wherever did you find this, Mage Quillen, at this time of ration and communal sacrifice? He kisses her on the top of her head, and she bats him away with mock annoyance. Where I found it does not matter, he says with great import. What does matter is that you are brilliant and should be given a lake full of gems for everything you do for us. Mage Annalise chuckles, her moss-green eyes dancing merrily. She scoops up the pomegranate and the coin purse and drops them both into her tunic pocket, then gathers up her supplies, stoppered vials, small sacks of dried herbs, a stone mortar and pestle. Well, she says to Fane as she stows her tools, Ancient One knows I've pulled you out of a scrape or two. She shoots him a poignant, amused glance. How many times have you been mage drunk? Fane thrusts his lip out, thinking. Oh, a few. He smiles mischievously at her. She says, nodding at him with jaded good humor. Never like this, though. She turns to me. Young lady, repeat after me. I will not layer spells. I'll do whatever I need to do to protect and take care of my family. I will be careful, I tell her flatly, meeting her level gaze with my own restored wall of fire. She repeats, frowning as if she sees me more clearly now and doesn't quite approve. Well then, she says, taking a deep, resigned breath. I'll be off. I attempt a polite smile at Mage Annalise, but I know my anger makes it appear strained. Thank you, I tell her tightly. I am in your debt. Mage Annalise nods at this, then gives Fane an affectionate pat on the arm and takes her leave. Well, Fane says pleasantly, turning to me. I want you, Mage Harrow, to rest here as long as you like. My home is your home. He gracefully places one arm over his chest and gives me a slight deferential bow. My irrational anger rises even higher along with the irrational urge to smack both Fane and Vale, so insulated by their money and their fancy cloaks and their fine wands. Panic rears its ugly head. Where will my family and I go? What are we going to do? I might be able to find an apprenticeship in Verpatia, but I have no way to get there. No money, no horses, nothing. We're all alone. Lower River, low-class peasants. Fane is still smiling wide at me, smug as a contented cat. There's an anticipatory gleam in his eye, and I realize that he's waiting for my thanks. I'm leaving, I tell him succinctly. Thank you for your assistance, but I need to find my family. I pin Fane with a polite but level stare, my heart pounding out my hurt. And I wouldn't want to sully your tent further with my rustic peasant ways. Fane steps back in surprise, like he's been slapped, then swallows audibly. You were awake? Yes. I bite off the word, my tone gone hard. I heard quite a bit of what you said. You and him. I turn and spear Vale with my stare. Vale's eyes have gone a fraction too wide, his intense gaze locked onto mine. I can't decide if he looks troubled or filled with furious contempt, which only makes my anger burn hotter. Fane's voice is tremulous.
Tesla, I never...
Stop! I cut Fane off, my cursed voice wavering. I know how it is. My family and I were low class and looked down on in Doveshire, and we'll be low class and looked down on in Gardneria. Because I didn't grow up with money like you. I glare at Vale. Or you. I turn back to Fane. We were so poor that we usually didn't have decent food. That's how rustic we are. Lower than peasants, actually. I shrug with feigned nonchalance, fiercely willing back the tears. The farmers ate better than us most of the time. Fane looks distraught.
Tesla, please.
No, really, stop. I thrust my palm out at him emphatically. I'm thankful to you, Mage Quillen. Truly, I am. Tears sting at my eyes, and I blink them back. You both saved me and my family, and I will never forget it. But there are a few things you should know before I leave. My heart hammers hot and hard. I turn to Vale and lock my gaze onto his. Like the fact that Jules Christian, the Celt I was with, he's my closest friend.
You might want to keep that bit of information to yourself,
Fane cautions, his voice gone low. I stare him down. Jules saved my life and was going to smuggle me into Verpachia. Fane shakes his head, his expression now troubled and uneasy.
It's often best to pick and choose which people might know of these private sorts of...
No! I put in, my tone firm. I'm not ashamed of it, and I'm glad you brought the priest in to bless me. I was glad for the ablutions. I glance at Vale again. My grandfather prayed for our safety day and night. Maybe you think that's superstitious nonsense. Maybe you've never had anything you needed to pray for. I'm reminded of the white bird briefly appearing that night, the image flashing in the back of my mind. But against all the odds, we're all here. What's left of my family... alive. So, perhaps grandfather's prayers were answered by the Ancient One's power. I pointedly make the symbol of self-blessing and self-protection toward Vale. Vale's jaw goes tight. He looks away, as if angered by my show of faith, and stares hatefully at the tapestried tent wall. And I do, in fact, know how to read. I look to Fane. Are you familiar with the Realm Apothecarium?
Yes, of course,
Fane stammers, nodding disjointedly.
That's the Premier Guild text.
He gives a nervous titter and shakes his head.
I've a hard time making heads or tails of the bulk of it.
I've worked every tonic in there to at least 1/8 capacity, using substandard cheap ingredients, I state flatly. Fane blinks at me.
That's, impressive.
And Principia Mathematica, have you studied that? Fane laughs.
Of course, I've worked out most of the sets.
Almost to the end? I finished it 2 years ago. Fane stares at me, silent. I turn to face Vale. He's gone very quiet and still, but I can sense the unsettled heat churning behind his fiery gaze. How about you, Vale? Have you worked through it? I purposely address him informally, even though it's considered disrespectful. I mean to insult him, and he knows it. He narrows white-hot eyes on me, his words clipped.
It was a bit beyond me.
Fane blows out a deep breath and shakes his head. I turn back to Fane. Vale and his sister think that because I'm poor, I can't appreciate fine things, that I'm illiterate. I pause, looking them both over boldly. I can see that things won't be that different here in some ways. My family and I are still poor, still viewed as lower class. But that's fine. No one is trying to kill us, and I can make a better life for us. I'm an apothecary, a good one. We'll find our way among the lower classes. My eyes flick toward Vale, whose storming gaze is hot on mine, and I hold his gaze with searing defiance before returning to Fane. I won't ask you to suffer my presence any longer than is necessary, Mage Quillen. I've polluted your dwelling long enough. I rise and ignore the hand Fane holds out to me, even though the room spins. I close my eyes for a brief second to steady myself, then make my way toward the exit. I pause, tent flap in hand, and turn back to them. And just so you both know, I've read Arnott and Ellerson and studied a fair bit of the history of the realm, and I can read simple Alfsiger. All self-taught. Fane stares at me in rapt amazement. His eyes flick toward Vale.
I told you should fast to her,
he murmurs. I blow out a contemptuous breath and eye Vale with disgust. You must be joking, I tell Fane. Vale can't even manage advanced mathematics. I'd never fast to him. He's far too ignorant. I turn on unsteady legs, push the tent flap open, and leave. Chapter 14 Level 5 Mage. The air is damp and cool outside the tent, a gauzy fog veiling the base. Fane's tent is perched high on an outcropping of rock, and I follow the sole meandering path sharply downhill, my body stiff as I scuff along the wet dirt. My thoughts are turbulent, but I have one goal in mind, to find my family. Soon the shadowy forms of Black Gardnerian military tents emerge from the fog. The sounds of early morning conversations echo in the air as cook fires are stoked and small knots of soldiers mill about, some at ease, some on duty and purposeful in their movements. Two young soldiers are sitting on a large rock that hugs my path, their conversation low and congenial. One of the young men turns, catching sight of me as I near. He shoots me a dazzling smile. He's breezily handsome, his cloak finely made, three silver lines hemming its edge. A level 3 mage. I stop in front of them. Please, I say imploringly, I need to find my family.
Of course,
the mage says, sliding down off the rock.
We can help you. I'm sure they're more than fine. They're being very well cared for, all the refugees.
He looks me over closely and glances in the direction of Fane's tent.
You must be Mage Tesla Harrow. I'm Nils Arden.
He gestures toward his companion with his chin.
And this is Miles Richard. We've heard tales of your creative shielding, and what I think must be a stunning level of bravery.
He holds out his hand to me. He's beautiful, Nils, his vivid green eyes lit with intelligence and curiosity. And my heart picks up speed as I give him my hand. He lifts it to his lips and plants a gentle kiss on the back of it. I gulp. He's got fire in his affinity lines. Not like Vale, but a steady line of it simmering in flares, artfully woven. The way he has his fire magic so firmly tamped down feels dangerous, like an unsettling mystery. This secret knowledge sends a delicious shiver through me. It's so at odds with his open, unguarded expression. I'm suddenly aware of the fact that I'm still wearing Fane's rumpled military tunic over my long skirt, and that my hair must be a tangled mess.
You're even more lovely than they said,
Nils tells me. I blush and look down, my eyes wandering to his hands. They're unmarked. He's unfasted. He gives me a brief, knowing glance before he releases my hand, his eyes liquid with warmth, as if we've shared a private joke. Like he knows some delicious, decadent secret about me. His companion, Miles, is not nearly as handsome. His eyes are too closely set, his nose large and long. He's also reed skinny and hunched awkwardly down, as if he's slightly put off by his own height. But his expression is open and well-meaning, and there's kindness in his eyes. He lurches forward, as if overcome, and takes both my hands in his. Earth magic. Not a lot, but what little there is runs strong and deep. My eyes flit to the two silver lines that hem his cheaply made cloak. Thank you, Miles says with deep feeling. Thank you for what you did. You saved my family. They were there in the barn. I was stationed on the southern border when the Celtic and Orisk armies advanced. They moved more quickly than we anticipated. When my family was locked in that barn, you bought them those few seconds. If you hadn't, His eyes are overflowing with gratitude, filling with tears.
Just thank you, Miss Harrell.